this is terrible radio now. I apologize.
This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligny Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
What a lovely day. A luscious day, as Mike Shannon would say.
Luscious.
He used the word luscious for a day like this, where we're going to have 60s and sun. Too bad the Cardinals aren't in town. They are in Washington.
In Washington.
On the Nats. Nats have lost five in a row. Cardinals and Nationals, the two youngest teams in baseball, averaging about 26, age 26 across the roster, are going in different directions. Cardinals are 5-4. Nats have lost five in a row. Are you impressed so far with what you've seen from the Redbirds?
Yeah. I mean, this is about, I don't know if they're going to be an over 500 team when the season is over. I would bet probably the under on that, but you can't be mad at two opening series wins in, you know, taking 2 of 3 and then 2 of 3. The Tigers are a good team. They were a playoff team. They're probably going to be a playoff team again. At least I think they are. And, you know, salvaging the finale. Good. Yeah. It would be really difficult to be a week and a half into the season and feel like 5-4 is not a good start. I mean, it's a good success, especially for this Cardinals team. And if you look at how the rest of the division has started, and I am certain this will change a lot as the weeks go on here, but the Cubs right now are off to a pretty bad start. They're supposed to win the division. So it'd be really difficult to look at what the Cardinals have done and not feel happy with it. And in particular, zeroing in on certain guys who were supposed to be part of the future. And we talked a little bit about Jordan Walker today with Matt Pauly on the Chris and Amy show.
What did Matt have to say?
Oh, I mean, you know, he said he's going to be better than Aaron Judge. No, what do you...
Mark it down, better than...
No, but I mean, what I said was, look, it's 9 games, but the numbers are there, the results are there. He's had tough stretches, but he had a good series in Detroit, and that this is a very big deal if he keeps this up. I don't think he's going to be a 300 hitter, 380 OBP guy all season long, but we're seeing power from him. We're seeing hit the ball a lot harder than he was hitting the ball and hitting the ball in the air. The grand slam was absolutely clobbered over the weekend, and that it's just encouraging. I know it's an early start, but it is encouraging that he looks that way, because this is a season about the future.
It is, and I have appreciated Jordan's work to get to this point. And he definitely looks, it's not even the home run is awesome. And when he squares one up, we know they travel. But to me, it's been that impressive approach at the plate. The fact that you all know what I'm talking about. He lays off those pitches where we used to watch him and just cringe when one would drop and you know he's going to flail at it. Mm-hmm, he's not doing it. And he's seeing the ball better, it looks like. He's just recognizing pitches better. That 4-pitch walk that he had against JJ, that set up JJ Weatherholt's walk-off hit after Vic then bunted the runners over, that was such a big deal 2 Saturdays ago. And I feel like every time I see Jordan, it's a little bit more of that. It's impressive right now. By the way, the Cardinals have completed a trade. So the Sonny Gray trade is now complete.
Mm-hmm.
The Cardinals made it earlier. They have acquired Patrick Galle, Galle.
He's going to A-ball, right?
He is. This is a reliever with a big arm, according to those who have watched him, but he also has struggles with control. But the Cardinals have identified, I think, these pitchers that they crunch all the data. I mean, they put eyes on them. Don't get me wrong. They have scouts out there, and they do their background checks after they crunch the data, and they say, is this guy good? What is he? Why isn't he doing this? Is this coaching, or is it him? And they do all their homework. But before all that, they look at the spin rate, they look at the data, and they say, we can fix this guy. We take this, and this, couple little tweaks here, maybe add this pitch, and he's better. And that's what the tech that they have acquired, the people, the eyeballs that they have put on this now in the front office, they feel confident. They're not going to hit on them all, but they're the ones that they hit on, they think will be a huge benefit to the team. Long way away to have Patrick Galle helping you out. 4.91 ERA in single A so far in his brief pro career, but he is the last piece of the Sonny Gray trade. So there you have it. The other thing about this is that I'm encouraged by how many people are asking me what I think about the Cardinals, more than I remember the last couple of years. There's a lot of intrigue. People want to know what's going on here. And I think as you continue to grow this fan base at the stadium, we know the fan base is all there, but as soon as you see more people going, that will lead to more people wanting to go. And you create that demand to see this team, this young team that everybody, I think, is interested in. People, some people like it, some people don't, or aren't all the way in yet, but everybody's, I think, interested in what they look like. There's a lot of newness to it, and that freshness, I think, is very attractive. What did you think of the Final Four? Illinois gets beat by UConn, tough, and Michigan obliterates Arizona. 91-73 doesn't do it justice. They blew Arizona off the floor, which was unreal, and that's why they're a 7-point favorite tonight.
Well, I think the Illini game, as I look back on it, didn't feel quite as close as it ended up being. It felt like it was a little more lopsided than the score indicated. Don't you think just by watching it? Because Illinois was just trying to get even pretty much the entire game. Mm-hmm. And at least that's the way it felt to me. I think the two best teams are in. And Illinois, when we talked about them 2 months ago, we did have legitimate conversations about them being an actual one seed potentially. This is going back 2 months or maybe a little longer than that, because they were playing that well. I mean, they got off to a really good start. The first half of the season for them, just outstanding. And they didn't really look that way toward the end. And I thought they were better than a three seed, maybe a two, but it's pretty obvious that these two teams were the two best. And so in the Final Four. So I am happy with this championship game. I think it's a really good matchup. I think UConn's going to keep it a lot closer. It feels like everybody's telling me Michigan is just going to blow them out because of the way they've looked. And I'm not going to go that far. I think this will be a much, much closer game than a lot of people seem to think.
Got a great coach over there in Dan Hurley, without a doubt. I think that Michigan will cover the seven. I don't know that it's a blowout, but I think they will pull away. This is how good Michigan is. First of all, we know they've beaten up pretty much everybody. I thought Arizona was the second best team in the country. I thought the Michigan-Arizona game was the matchup of the two best teams in the country. And as I mentioned, they blew them out. And one of the things I'm very impressed with, Dusty May is also a great coach. And he did this thing against Arizona. They're so tall that he worried about lobs, that they would be able, because of their size, that they'd be able to get up and disrupt the lob. Michigan loves to lob and dunk and bomb threes and everything else they do. So he actually, if you go back and watch this, he had Elliot Cadeau, their point guard, passing off the backboard. So they go down as missed shots. But the point guard was lobbing it off the backboard to his big men so they could go get it and throw it down or put it back in. I mean, it's like, it's out of the box thinking that I love May. That's why I appreciate what he's going to do against UConn. I think UConn's in a little trouble tonight. I don't think they're going to get blown out, but this Michigan team is the real deal, man. I mean, they are at every position. They've got it. They have the size to get Terrace Reed in a little trouble, that big boy at 7'3". They have one heck of a team. And I'd be surprised if Michigan lost. I'll say this. I'll be very impressed if UConn beats Michigan tonight. And they will be a worthy champion because Michigan is ferocious.
Michigan, they better be. Almost their entire starting lineup is from somewhere else.
That's incredible.
I mean, they've used the transfer. Yeah,
welcome to the portal. But yeah,
I think it was of all the Final Four teams, they had the most transfers in the starting. Yeah. It was four of the five, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, you better be good.
Yeah, it's pretty.
You're poaching everybody's players.
It's pretty awesome. I like that Dusty May though. Well, also, he's a former Indiana guy. We'll talk to Greg Amsinger, a Lindenwood guy, with us, MLB Network. He's coming up next. We're going to talk to Mike Claiborne about baseball and get his thoughts on some hoops at 12:30. And we will save the Blues discussion because they are really something. Amy Markscores joins us at 12:45, so we're loaded today.
A swing and a ball is popped up short left field. So JC back there, he makes the catch for a Redbird winner. The Cardinals beat Detroit 5-3.
Yes, they did. And the Cardinals are in Washington for a game tonight. Earlier game. I like these 5:45 games. 4:50 pregame on KMOX.
Wait till they have like a 3 o'clock game for some reason on a Wednesday and it's not opening day.
What the heck? 5:45 is cool, especially for us morning drive people. See, that game wraps up at 8 or so and, you know, you call it a night. Welcome in from MLB Network, Greg Amsinger. It's always great to have him part of the show. The Lindenwood University grad is making us proud. KMOX alum in New York, New Jersey. You're in Secaucus. Isn't that right? Isn't that where the office is?
Yeah, beautiful Secaucus. We're going to be moving, though, to a different town called Elmwood Park in 2028. This gigantic facility. So MLB Network in 2028 will be even bigger, fresh technology, bigger studios. It's going
to
be great.
That's a lot of stuff. I can't imagine all the stuff they have in there. They're going to move from one place to the other. Greg Amsinger is with us. What do you think about the Cardinals? Off they go, 5-4 so far.
You know, take away Dustin May's starts, the most impressive part of the team is the starting pitching. 2.7 ERA if you eliminate those two starts. Now, as I fixate on the St. Louis Cardinals, like everyone listening to this right now does, Dustin May's stuff is why he's still in the big leagues. He has more non-competitive pitches than any pitcher I've ever seen. The reason I'm talking about him is because if he can just hone his stuff into the zone, I'm not saying have the lowest walk rate in the league. I'm just saying the non-competitive pitches where it's a ball out of the hand is why guys are really tunneling him in the zone. When he comes into the zone, they know it's a strike. Therefore, they are swinging. His stuff is too good to get lit up like this. And I would love to see him eliminate those non-competitive pitches because as of right now, Pallante's last start, he goes again today. That changeup really, I did not expect it to be such an impact in terms of his repertoire. So I love what I'm seeing out of him. I just think Dustin May needs to get it in the zone, have every pitch be competitive. And this rotation, to me, is the most impressive part of the team.
Bullpen, I think before we went into the season, I know Tom and I talked about this, that it could end up being a pretty good bullpen. And usually, not usually, but sometimes it does take a little bit before a pen can really start to settle in. Do you like this pen the Cardinals have put together?
I do. I love the pen. I think O'Brien's the closer. I never thought Ryan Stanek was a closer. I like him better in that setup role, which is how they used him against Detroit the other day. Look, if the weak link in terms of ERA is Swanson, who I think has the best stuff in the entire bullpen, he's eventually going to get it going. I mean, this guy has such sync on everything that comes out of his hand. It's like the closest thing I've seen. Remember Zach Britton? When he was having a Cy Young contending closer season for the Baltimore Orioles, you couldn't get the ball in the air off this guy. So Swanson getting off to a slow start makes me go, wait a minute, the bullpen's going to be in good hands. It's fine. I like this stuff. Leahy was a weapon in the pen. He was. And look, right now, Soriano looks like he's going to be that guy to replace Leahy's role. I love Leahy as a starter. But as of right now, I feel very good about the stuff on the mound for the St. Louis Cardinals. Jordan Walker making all of us blush is a tremendous headline attraction. If that can continue, I do not think this is a rebuild. I said this a couple weeks ago on this show. It's not a rebuild. The Cardinals are going to be competitive in this winnable division.
I love this. Okay. Isn't it funny, too, how I'm not putting you in this category or any of us for that matter, but how the whole world, it seemed, was like, where's Velasquez? How is he not in the middle of this order? What is Jordan Walker doing on this lineup, let alone this team? And now he's hitting fourth. I mean, it's remarkable, isn't it, how fast that can flip, Greg?
Well, it's all based on data. When you know the way Chaim Bloom looks at things, he's going to put someone in that role who isn't chasing. His chase rate is down dramatically from last year in the 20 percentile where it was like 34%. He's swinging in the zone almost at an 80% clip. Last year was 66%. So if you want a cleanup hitter, those numbers tell the St. Louis Cardinals analytical front office that that's what a cleanup hitter does. He's slugging on legit fastballs where that pitch he hit, that grand slam over the weekend, that's a foul ball last year for Jordan Walker. Okay. He is hunting now instead of hitting defensively. And when the person that's got the highest upside of any human that wears a Cardinal uniform is hunting, then you got to put him in a spot where he can drive and runs. So if he's going to keep hitting like this, he's going to be in the top four in the lineup going forward.
Weatherholt's debut, I think he's been pretty good. I mean, we're talking about somebody who is very raw, still very young. He's a few months younger than Jordan Walker. And I know Cardinals fans really excited about what he might become. So now that we've seen him for a week and a half, what do you think?
You know, it's an incredible veteran approach to hitting. He knows what his role is. He's a leadoff guy. He sees a lot of pitches. His on-base percentage is a hair under 360 at the moment. That's a good leadoff guy. I mean, everything you loved about Brendan Donovan, and, oh, what are the Cardinals going to do without Brendan Donovan? Is there a drop-off, really? I don't see it with this young man, J.J. Weatherholt, who's only going to get better with age. Look, there are certain swings that I fall in love with. And hosting the draft for 17, 18 years like I've done, I watch video on guys. And I knew there was someone that he reminded me of. And then I finally interviewed J.J. last week. And he models his swing after Robinson Cano. Mm. And I was like, wow, if you put those guys side by side, it's almost the identical setup. Rhythmic swing. Robbie Cano was great against lefties and righties. And J.J. Weatherholt, to me, looks exactly the same. It's a batting stance that allows him to stay in on lefties. He looks like a surefire star. I am a huge fan of J.J. Weatherholt. My basketball comp would be a great shooter that lets the game come to him. He doesn't force himself into anything. He's wise beyond his years. And so far, defensively at second base, he's making it work. So 10 out of 10 right now for J.J. Weatherholt.
What do you think about the catching situation? I talked to Haim yesterday, and he said too early to start predicting when guys are going to join at the big leagues. And I was talking about Jimmy Crooks. So you have Crooks, Bernal, and Rodriguez are really nice prospects coming up. And you have Pajes, Pozo, and Herrera here in the big leagues. The Cardinals have some depth here at the catcher position. How do you see this playing? I mean, Crooks is tearing it up right now, although it's very early.
Well, it's really weird because if there's a tradable piece, it's Ivan Herrera. And no one wants to hear that because he's the two-hole hitter for the St. Louis Cardinals. And lately he's been looking great at the plate again. I think he's a terrific offensive player. I do believe the Cardinals want to have him behind the plate once every 5 days to show the other 29 big league teams that he's a catcher to get maximum value. I know this sounds wild as I say the Cardinals are being competitive in a winnable division, but I said the same thing on Baltimore radio the other day. I think Adley Rutschman's going to get traded. I think they're showing all 29 other teams that he's still an all-star level catcher. You do not give Samuel Basayo over $60 million when he played two games in the big leagues to be a DH. He's not playing first base. Pete Alonso is playing first base every day. That's why you signed him, because he plays every day. So you're going to stunt the growth of your top catching prospect. Oh, by the way, the Orioles drafted two catchers in their first two picks last year in the MLB draft. So the writing's on the wall. And when it comes to the St. Louis Cardinals, their greatest position of depth is catching. And you don't want to roadblock these young men. I think Herrera is eventually, at some point before this season's over, going to be wearing a different uniform. It doesn't make sense any otherwise. Control matters. Haim Bloom knows that. All of these young catchers, he doesn't want to part ways with because they're controllable players. So Herrera's going to keep hitting. They're going to put him in the primo spot in the lineup. They're going to remind everyone they can still catch. And I think that's how they're going to have to address it, because, Tom, the league knows they have a surplus of talent at that position.
They do.
You know, the divisions in baseball, for the most part, there aren't a ton of surprises until you get to the National League Central and the National League East. Maybe. I mean, the Marlins are leading the East at the moment. And I know, again, we're only a week and a half in, but, you know, you've got the Cubs in last place in the Central right now. The Reds are in third. The Pirates are in second. Milwaukee's still, you know, leading the division. But is there something about the start to the season, you know, this first week and a half, that has you surprised in any way?
Well, I will say this. For the Milwaukee Brewers to part ways with the ace of their staff multiple times and not skip a beat, it is astounding. It's why their front office has won front office of the year last 2 years. We're going to interview Kyle Harrison today on the show. He was traded once again in the offseason to the Milwaukee Brewers from the Boston Red Sox, and he looks like he's going to be a Cy Young contender. It's amazing. I mean, what they did last year with Quinn Priester. It's unbelievable what this Brewers team is able to do when they get rid of Freddie Peralta. You know, before that, it was Corbin Burns, and they'll still win over 90 games. They have built something that is quite special in Milwaukee. I'll say this about the Chicago Cubs, though. The Cade Horton injury is a massive deal. To me, it is a rotation that has a bunch of number three starters. Cade Horton, who finished second in the NL Rookie of the Year race, I thought he should have been the Rookie of the Year, is the only one that's got the potential to be a true ace. I don't think Steele is ever going to be an ace again. I think Imanaga, all those guys are just a bunch of number three starters, Tyone, all of them. So for them to actually reach their full potential, the Cubs need Cade Horton to pitch like an ace. And that injury scares me. So I don't know. They put him on just for precautionary reasons, but that forearm tingling and the numbness in the hand, it scares me. So I think they're missing Kyle Tucker more than they thought they would. And I'm not believing that the Chicago Cubs are going to finish in the top three in this division.
Oh, MLB. Ooh, wow. MLB tonight is that's America's pregame show.
America's.
You know? I mean, it is. And Greg Amsinger is the host, and we appreciate you very much. What time you go on today? Four?
No, five. Yeah, your time.
Four,
5
my time. Okay.
Eastern, you're right. Yeah, four okay. Local in St. Louis.
We'll be all over it. We appreciate you, buddy. Thanks as always for Gas House Gang appearances on Mondays.
You guys are awesome. We'll do it again next week.
Thank you. It's always great to get the week started. When we come back, Mike Claiborne, Cardinals broadcaster, with us on the Gas House Gang.
Now, the Cardinals Conversation on KMOX. Sponsored by Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
We just spent the whole break talking about, well, the Cards-Cubs rivalry, White Sox-Cubs rivalry. The fact that Greg Amsinger mentioned he doesn't think the Cubs will finish in the top three in the division? Central.
Wow.
That riled up, I'm sure, a few Cardinals fans. That's how we got going, because some Cardinals fans eat that stuff up. They eat that up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if the Cardinals don't make the playoffs, but also the Cubs won't, they'll be like, yep, good year.
That's sometimes fine. Spite rooting is a lot of fun.
Cardinals fans want this, Mike Claiborne. They want this bad, but I think most are willing to take the time required to get this done. Do you think, has your opinion changed at all over the last, let's say, few months watching this team? Do you still think that the team is, you know, on the same track that you thought? Does this beginning of the season change your mind at all about where they are headed?
I think they're on the same track. You know, you grow and you learn from each game, basically every inning. And, you know, what I like so far is the fact that they're paying attention to detail. They haven't beaten themselves, whether it was defense or just poor pitching or lack of offense. Now, they got shut out the other day, but that's going to happen over the course of the season. So I like their direction. It's still a small sample size, but I think I'd rather be in their situation than some other teams who've gotten off to a little bit of a shaky start.
Well, what about in this division? Because the Reds were a playoff team last year. The Brewers keep finding ways. I mean, I don't know how many times I've counted them out over the last several years, and I've learned my lesson never to do it again. So do you think the landscape of the division might be changing?
That's a good question, Chris. I'm like you with the Brewers. Every year, if somebody asks me about them, I always say, well, they're not going to be in it. Mm-hmm. Because when you look at their lineup, you say, well, who do they have? And then the next thing you know, they're winning the division, and some guys having a career season. And I'm sure they're going to have a guy this year that's going to step up and do something. With that said, you know, Pittsburgh, that's probably the team you pay close attention to, only because I think their pitching could be as good as anybody beyond Paul Skenes. They have some other guys in their rotation that are pretty good. I think they're having the problem of trying to figure out where, like the Cardinals and some other teams, where is the offense going to come from? But I think Pittsburgh, Cincinnati is a team that I think you have to respect because they can swing the bat a little bit. They have young pitching, and I think the good news is they have young pitching. The bad news is they have young pitching, so you just don't know what kind of pitching you're going to see every day. There could be somewhat of a change in the guard. You know, the one thing with the Cubs, you know, let's go back 10 years ago in 2016 when they won this whole thing. We kind of thought the Cubs were going to be around for a while. I mean, they had a lot of good young players, and, you know, they had a lot of things working for them, and they haven't really gotten a real whiff since. And so, you know, just as easy as it came to him, it went away, and maybe it'll go away for another 100 years. I don't know. But the division, in my opinion, is wide open right now. I don't think there's a clear-cut team. Even with Milwaukee's situation, they could come back to the pack pretty quick.
What's the latest on Mason Wynn, Klaibs, that you're hearing? We didn't get to see him yesterday. We know it's been a week for him, the car accident and the fact that he had some hip soreness.
Yeah, he had a little hip soreness that's barking a little bit. I think it's more precaution than anything else, Tom, because, you know, other than opening day in Detroit, the weather was not ideal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Mason plays hard. I mean, this is a guy, and you've been around, he's not the biggest guy in the world. And so the key for him is just trying to stay healthy. And I think it was more of a precaution to make sure he gets in a better weather environment where he doesn't cramp up or, you know, it takes a little longer for him to get loose. So I'm not overly concerned about it, you know, but it is a hip and you have to be conscious of it. But I don't think we should push the panic button at this point.
So in his place, I mean, he had been batting fourth for much of the season. So that hasn't happened over the last couple of games. Meanwhile, Jordan Walker did yesterday hit cleanup. The game before that, he went 3-for-4 in the 5 spot. Do you think we're now seeing Walker or will see more of him in that position, even when Wynn is ready to come back and play?
It sounds right. Let's just put it this way. Jordan Walker, Nolan Gorman, former first-round picks. Yesterday, one was hitting fourth, the other one was hitting fifth. And I kind of think in that crystal ball that we had, you know, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, we thought that someday this may come to fruition. Maybe this is the start, because we certainly waited on them to blossom, and maybe this is the year it all comes together. I don't have a problem with it. And, you know, the question would be then, where do you hit Mason Wynn? Man, I might want to hit Mason Wynn in front of Victor Scott. And can you imagine those two guys getting on base deep in the order? So when that second and third inning rolls around, then here comes the top of the order. And now all of a sudden, as John Rooney would say, we're going to keep the line moving.
You know, who's leading this team in hitting right now? It's not Walker. It's not Weatherholt. It's not Burley or Herrera. It's Victor Scott II. Guy's hitting .310. Yeah. He's having a terrific start to the year.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, Tom, I think there's a common denominator with Wynn and Walker and Gorman. The commitment that they made in the offseason, along with how things are now set up in Jupiter, where we have a lot of state-of-the-art items that they can work with that helps them become more effective. I think between their dedication and commitment and the facilities, I think we're seeing some of the early fruits being born because of the project that they undertook.
And we did talk a little bit about the rotation with Greg Amsinger a moment ago, and Dustin May has had a rough go of it in his first couple of starts. I think he's better mm-hmm. than this. I don't know. I mean, this is a little unexpected for me. What do you figure is going on with him early on here?
Well, you know, I watch him pitch, and I'm saying to myself, he has good stuff. He has good movement. I'm sure he'd like to stay out of the middle of the plate. The challenge, it seems like, for him is he's having just that one inning that really kind of bogs him down, where maybe his pitch count is up, or maybe he hangs one, or maybe there's a ball that drops in for a base hit. It's not like what we saw with some pitchers of last season, where it was, you know, 6-15 batting practice in some cases, but the only problem was those hits counted. It's not like what we saw last year. And I'll be honest with you, I mean, he's really my least concern. I think guys like that have been around for a bit. We'll figure it out. And I think he's getting back to his real health, his real playing weight, considering what took place last year. So I'm expecting him to really still have a very solid season.
Klaibs, before we depart here, we're going to talk to Amy Markscores in a minute about the Blues. I want to get your thoughts. I mean, you know hockey as well as anybody in this town. I mean, I guess nobody told them that they were out of the playoff race. They started to make a run. It might be too little too late here, but, man, what a line that is. Holloway, Snuggerud, Thomas. They are dynamic.
They last night was a clinic on how – to me – I thought it was like playoff hockey, the way they took care of both ends of the rink. And, you know, this Colorado bunch can skate, man. I mean, it was almost like the old days when the Blues would play the Blackhawks in Chicago Stadium, where they would say it felt like the ice was tilted for the first 10 minutes. The Blues not only weathered that storm, they kind of poured it on Colorado a little bit and made Colorado take some bad penalties, made Colorado do some things that were out of character. Now, granted, they didn't have Cale Makar last night, who's one of the best players in the game, but still in all, they have a whole lot of talent. And I think, Tom, the season comes down to tomorrow as far as I'm concerned. Can you duplicate what you did last night in your own barn against Colorado Rockies, who are the best team in hockey right now?
It's going to be fun, no doubt about it. National championship tonight, UConn, Michigan. You got to pick
Rockies.
Them.
I meant Avalanche.
Yeah, you meant Avalanche.
Now I'm getting old now. I'm thinking about the old Colorado Rockies when Don Cherry was – no, not Don Cherry. Who's out in Colorado? The Colorado Rockies when they first had a team out there.
We
were just talking about the old NHL Colorado Rockies team today. Amy was talking
Kansas
about
Kansas City Scouts, Colorado Rockies. Well, they had some Lulus back then.
Who you got tonight? UConn, Michigan.
I like Michigan. Yeah. I like Michigan. I just think that their size and just their skill set and the fact that they can guard. But I think this will go down as perhaps. If the officials let them play, this might be one of the best championship games we will see because, you know, UConn doesn't have many holes on its song sheet either. I mean, they really do a great job. And the reason why Illinois lost is because UConn didn't turn the ball over. And when you get a lead on a team, you don't turn the ball over. It's kind of hard to catch up.
And by the way, going back to the old Rockies, you were correct. Don Cherry became the head coach in 79-80.
And he had a dog named Blue that he took everywhere. And they, you know what? They had a guy named Wilf Paimon, if I'm not mistaken. He scored 41 goals one year for them. They just had a bunch of cast-offs. You know, it was an expansion team back then, and they had a bunch of cast-offs. They weren't very good. They had a goalie named Hardy Astrom. They called him hard-to-hit Hardy Astrom because he let everything in.
See, those teams are fun, though. You go have a cold one, you go watch some hockey. I love it.
Well, if you go watch them, you better have more than one cold one.
Yeah, this here says that Cherry called Hardy Astrom the Swedish Siv.
He was bad, man.
Because he let everything in.
He was awful. I mean, if he'd have been from Switzerland, it would have made more sense.
Have a great one, Claibs. Appreciate it.
All right, you guys take care.
Cardinals broadcaster Mike Claiborne with us on KMOX's Gas House Gang. Amy Markscores talks Blues hockey when we come back.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
We always have a good time when Amy Markscores jumps in on the Gas House Gang. She is our in-house hockey expert, without question. And we welcome you to the program. Blues are the talk right now, along with the Cardinals. Blues are good. That line was amazing. This setup that Snuggy had, can I call him Snuggy?
Snuggy. Okay?
I hear him called Snuggy, so I'm going to get in on it. That Snuggy had for Robert Thomas was fantastic. I watched it like 10 times.
Yeah.
It was great. I mean, that's a dynamic line. If they stay healthy, they're going to be great. Blues beat the Avs 3-2.
I think it's the number one line in the NHL. I would make that argument. Do I have to go back and double check with receipts? Yes, but Robert Thomas right now, I think it's since the Olympic break, he's playing at a level comparable to a Connor McDavid. And as far as his points production, his points per game, technically, we keep saying that all the Blues are having an off year, which other than Justin Falk, it really was true. Took Joel Hofer a long time to get his act together. Jordan Binnington took him longer. And obviously the production of Jordan Kyrou is not there. But Robert Thomas, technically, and Matthew DeFranks brought this up in the Post-Dispatch, is actually having a career year. He has a higher goals per game average this year, 21 goals in 58 games, than he did in his previous career high in 23-24, when he had 0.32 goals per game, which was 26 goals in 82 games. So right now, he's picked up the pace because he missed those games with injury that he is technically having a career year, which is pretty impressive. But yes, that Holloway Snuggerud Thomas line is the hottest line in the NHL, and the Blues are 3 points out of a playoff spot
with 6 games left to play. That the Kings have also 6, the Predators have 6. Those are the teams that you're really looking at here. and the San Jose Sharks with 75 games they have played. So they've got one in hand here, which gives them a little bit of an advantage. So what do you think is going to happen here?
I know. I don't know. Curbs and I had this discussion last week. That game on Wednesday night, was it the
Kings?
The San, was it the Kings?
San Jose and then the Kings.
San Jose and then the Kings. Was that San Jose game a must win? Yeah. And Curb said it absolutely was. And I don't know, I'm always wrong, but I was playing a little bit of devil's advocate. And I said, no, I'm going to push back. It's not a must win. They're going to make their job a lot harder, but they can still make the playoffs if they lose this game. He said, he's like, yes, mathematically, but their job is going to be so much harder and it is going to come back to haunt them. And it has, but here they are sitting 3 points out of a playoff spot. And you hate that even though they got 5 of 8 points on that road trip, the games they dropped were to the San Jose Sharks and the LA Kings. I mean, those were tough ones to lose. I have no idea what's going to happen, but I'll tell you what, if there were so many games where they were close, they had 4 games that they lost in the final minute, the final seconds of the game, they lost those games. You win 1 or 2 of those, you're in the playoffs. And remember when they lost all the overtime games?
Yeah.
You win a few of those, you're in the playoffs.
And unfortunately for them, they don't play any of the teams in front of them.
Right.
So they can't, you know, make up ground against them by beating them. That stinks.
Well, here's, I know something. I know what's going to happen tomorrow. They're going to be 5 out because Nashville and LA mm-hmm. play each other. So you're guaranteed you're 5 out tomorrow. So you're both right. I mean, they were still technically in it, but that was a game they had to have.
Yep. Yep. And I think you could say that that is going to be the game that comes back to haunt them. Sure. But like I said, they had so many close calls this season and all of those overtime games when they couldn't even, you know, they couldn't pull off a victory in overtime for, what was it, 7, 8 overtime games. Those points come back to haunt you in this close of a race. You flip the switch on just a few of those events, and the Blues are in a playoff spot. So, like I said, if they don't manage to do it, then they didn't deserve to be in the playoffs.
So the way I look at this, and I know we've got to go here in a second, but the way I look at it is if they miss out on the playoffs here, which seems more likely than not, it's not necessarily a bad thing because maybe it forces some tough decisions to happen an offseason.
I think the tough decisions at this point were going to happen anyway, whether or not they made the playoffs. And I would not have hated that playoff experience for those young guys to taste it because, they were going to have an early exit. Sure, let's say they do have an early exit. That experience is not wasted. I would love for them to get a taste of the playoffs. But, I mean, like you said, I think Tom hit the nail on the head with 5 points out. That's a big one.
Yeah. How about this news bomb as we finish? This is from Pete Thamel of ESPN, NBA, former NBA coach Michael Malone, I should say, who was fired by the Nuggets about a year ago. He is going to be the new coach at North Carolina.
Oh.
NBA championship
no Billy
coach
Donovan,
with the
huh?
Nuggets. Huh. Pete Thamel reporting that North Carolina intends to hire longtime NBA coach Michael Malone is their new basketball coach. That's according to sources. We'll see what becomes official there. That's a big one. On the day of the national championship. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. For Chris Ranji, for Matt Pajeski, I'm Tom Ackerman. Thanks to all of our guests, Greg Amsinger, Mike Claiborne as well, Bernie Miklas, and Ollie Marmel with us tomorrow.